Welcome to the Kids Joining Eternity podcast, where we help break the silence surrounding miscarriage, stillbirth, and infant loss. Some of the content may be graphic or triggering, but our goal is to help provide healing, hope, and education to the community. Hello, and welcome to the Kids Joining Eternity podcast. I'm Sydney Rashidzada, and I'm here with my co-host, April Rutledge. April, say hello.
Hello.
And we have a really wonderful guest today. Her name is Kelly McNeil, and she is with the Oklahoma City County Health Department. So I'm really excited that you're going to be on the podcast today, Kelly, and to hear your perspective and what you do. So welcome to the podcast, Kelly.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate you inviting us.
And so you, your title, I remember I asked you when we first met, what is your title? And you were, I wanted to get it right, and you are a supervisor. That sounds very fancy. And I just, so what are you supervising? Tell us what you do.
Right. I am at City County Health Department, but I do supervise, but two programs that are really dovetailed together. So it's the Fetal and Infant Mortality Review Program, which we just call FIMR for short, F-I-M-R, as well as Maternal and Child Health Outreach. So both of those things work in tandem together.
Yes, absolutely. So that must be a really interesting job to play and or a role to have. And we started kind of a partnership together, Kids Joining Eternity, with you guys. Can you talk a little bit about how our partnership began, how that evolved?
Sure. I think really and truly, just it kind of naturally evolved. We were in several meetings together with Melanie Edwards, and it just kind of naturally gravitated, I think, to each other and what we were doing and what Kids Joining Eternity wanted to do. And so met with her and just got very excited for that partnership. It was really great. As part of our outreach, we actually have some social work services that we do. So it was naturally fit very well with the support groups that Kids Joining Eternity does. And so we're able to make referrals back and forth, share some resources and materials and those sort of things. So it kind of just was a natural outgrowth of that relationship and partnership that's grown over the years.
Absolutely. Because since you're given your role there, you are privy to really the information, like the data, like the who is suffering these losses. So therefore, you know, connecting those two services is what you do. What can you talk about the services you provide within the Oklahoma City County Health Department? What do you guys do?
Yeah. Well, within the health department itself, and this is kind of maybe a little expanded from your question, but from the City County Health Department as a whole, many people only think of it as like pool inspections or restaurant inspections, mm-hmm. or just where I go to get immunizations for my children. And the health department really has a wide array of health and wellness programs there. And I'll talk about mine shortly, but to expand on that a little bit, we have things like teen pregnancy prevention, that program that we do in schools. We have healthy livings type activities. We have Total Wellness that does food and nutrition courses and helps with obesity online. We have all sorts of course, emergency preparedness that we've done during COVID, and you've seen a lot of that out there in the world. So a lot of those services are actually offered at the health department. So I wanted to share that. As well as the services that we do, we are a little bit unique, the program that I supervise, because we actually are the only program at City County that expands beyond just Oklahoma County. We actually do a 5-county area. So that includes Pottawatomie, Canadian, Cleveland, Logan, and Oklahoma counties. We do review all of the fetal and infant deaths that happen within that 5-county area. We have a little bit of a criteria, so it's not every single one, but as long as it's not a homicide or court involved, then we will review it, and that they have services within that 5-county area. And part of that is because what we're really looking for in reviewing those cases isn't just to be voyeurs in people's lives. It's really to look for what kind of trends we see, what kind of gaps in services that we might be able to fill. So that's really why we do this review process, is to identify through the data and through those experiences that families have where we as a community can do better. And so that's really what our program's about.
That's awesome.
I just want to jump in and say, with all of my losses, because I did deliver all of my children at the hospital, I did have to fill out the sheet that is given out to all of your demographics and all of your pregnancy conditions and things like that. And so I know that that gets turned over to you guys so you can compile it and then get your data and your research to help.
Yes, it absolutely is. So we get all that sort of documentation around families. We are written into the legislature so to help on morbidity issues. So there is legislation that provides that so that we are able to access that information. Of course, everything that we do is de-identified. Yeah. So when we go to our reviews and all of that sort of thing, that information is never shared on an individual level. Again, what we're really looking for is where are there gaps in services or what was maybe missed that we could do better on. So
That's awesome.
That's really what we're looking for. And then our outreach component is really does a lot on education and awareness, making people aware of the issues. Most people don't realize we lose just infants, not even fetals, but just infants. We lose a baby a day in the state.
Wow.
And we lose a mom every month. So we are really high as far as national numbers on the amount of loss that we have. And in our 5-county area that we cover, we have over a quarter of all those happening just in those 5 counties. So there's a lot of work to be continued to be done and a lot of education on a few things that are as preventative as we could possibly be.
Absolutely. I tell you, that number, the baby, you said a baby a day is lost, mm-hmm. correct? That number doesn't surprise me very much, because just in working with Kids Joining Eternity and through my losses that I've had and April's, I feel like it happens so often.
It does.
And the range with which people share about it or want to talk about it varies, which is why what you guys do is so important to help mm-hmm. gather that and provide those opportunities for outreach, because it can be very isolating. So the one baby a day doesn't surprise me. What shocks me was when you said the one mother a month.
Yeah.
To me, that's like mind-blowing, because I feel like nobody really talks about it.
We don't talk about in this community at all.
Right.
We focus on infant and fetal, you know, and child loss. But one of the things that we don't touch on is, you know, the fact that there are mothers who lose their lives every day bringing children into this world.
Yeah, maternal mortality is huge. And we unfortunately are at the top of the list. I think right now, I'm going to throw this out, and I'm hoping that I'm right. I think we're about fourth in the nation as far as the top. We have been as far as the first. So we are trying to make some strides in that. There's a lot to go into that. And we can expand on that if you want.
No, I would love to. I mean, I want to know, like, what are the factors, the most common factors that contribute to maternal loss?
They're all quite different.
Yeah.
You know, of course, every family is very, very different. I will tell you that it is, there's a lot of issues around diversity and equity there. So our minority populations are dying exponentially higher than our Caucasian moms. Mm-hmm. a lot is doing around hemorrhaging. A lot is we look into implicit bias there. So while we're not pointing fingers, we are saying that women have a really hard time sometimes being heard.
Yes.
And women have a hard time understanding or listening, you know, to a lot of people around them. So they might go home and they don't feel well, and they haven't been feeling well since the birth. And they know that they don't feel well, but they're just kind of being told, oh, it's just because you just had a baby, rather than really listening to. So understanding the signs and symptoms.
Right.
Is really, really important for those moms. Again, that's an education component that we try and put out there. You know, understand that if you're feeling a certain way, or you just think you're feeling a certain way, it's okay to reach out and to find out and to go talk to your physician and talk to the right medical professionals.
Right. It's about having access.
It's the access is huge. And that is something that I've worked with various health organizations over the years. And that's something that's prevalent across any health conditions, I feel like, in this state, is that access to care is really, really hard for certain populations.
Actually, it's across every population in Oklahoma. So, we are traditionally a rather poor state.
We got a lot of work to do.
You know, I don't usually go too far into this kind of conversation, but I think it's relevant for today. We really are a state that, you know, a lot of people are employed, but they may have two or three jobs and they just don't offer health insurance there. And so making sure that people have access to that care, we see, of course, I don't cover, but we see that a lot in rural Oklahoma. You know, just is there even a physician that delivers in their county? So we have these, areas that we call kind of delivery deserts, where you just don't even have access to an OB or someone who delivers. We have some counties that don't even have hospitals, you know, and we have a lot of rural hospitals that are struggling to keep open. So, and then of course, the last couple of years, COVID has not helped those numbers at all.
No, absolutely not. And I do want to talk about that, how it's affected what you all do. But going back to what you were just talking about that the scarcity or that type of the lack of access, and how we were talking about it specifically related to maternal mortality. But I want to go back to now the infant mortality and something that you said. And I know it's kind of hard to talk about this idea of prevention, right? Like how sure. can, like every mother who's had a miscarriage or stillbirth or lost their baby is going to blame themselves. I don't care who you are. Going to. And while it's hard to say the word prevention, because I'm not trying to imply that at all, but I think it's right. important that we talk about that for our listeners. Just for honest, I mean, we, you know, just for the health of all of our sure. babies, not pointing blame. So can you talk about like some things about that you see in that the infant mortality of ways of the whys, the right. prevention, et cetera.
Yeah. And again, when we're doing a lot of our education and awareness, we don't like using those words either, because we do. We are not going to shame moms. We are not going to guilt anybody. There's plenty of that out there in mm-hmm. the world. We don't need to add to that conversation. But we do talk about reducing the risks. So what can we do to reduce the risks in the same way that you would make sure that your baby was buckled in the car? You're reducing the risk. That doesn't mean that you still aren't going to have a car wreck, but you've done everything possible to reduce that risk, right?
Right.
So we kind of use that as an analogy for a lot of the things that we talk about. So just to give you kind of an example, the top three reasons, right? And this is historically, this is across the United States, and we fall right in line here in Oklahoma with that. is congenital anomalies. So we have about a third of all of our infants, their cause of death is related to a congenital anomaly. And while that is absolutely not preventable, what we also know in Oklahoma is we have very poor outcomes here. So if you have a mama who's not very healthy or living in an environment that's not very healthy, then that's just going to contribute to that on down the line.
Absolutely. Right?
So trying to educate, especially young women, about things like folic acid is a great thing to do. It helps with ectopic pregnancies, right? It helps with birth defects. So get on that. Our daily vitamins, you know, if you are considering having a baby, then go ahead and go to your physician and see where you're at. If you have a chronic health condition, make sure that's under control and that you're seeing a physician for all those things. So those kind of things, trying to help moms just be as healthy as they can be before they get pregnant. Now, the second leading cause of death, and these are kind of in different populations, have a different 1, 2, and 3, but prematurity. This really hits our African-American moms a lot. So, matter of fact, it's the number one cause of death in that population. Mm-hmm. And so making sure that we try and get those babies further down the road, right? That we try and do, again, be healthy. Tobacco use contributes to this, although not in that specific population. We have, you know, a lot of contributing factors that go into prematurity. Stress is huge for premature babies. And as we know, there's been a lot of stress in our world in the last couple of years. And so those numbers are really, really high. And then one, and I don't want to get too far in the weeds with this. We call it SUID. It's marked sometimes as SIDS, but the way we talk about it is sleep-related deaths. So babies often pass in their sleep. It's very rare to have a SIDS death, and I'm going to say that again. It's exceedingly rare to have a SIDS death. Part of that is because there's very stringent criteria to call a baby SIDS, that died of SIDS. Mm-hmm. It has to have an investigation. Only the ME can make that determination. All of those kind of things go into that determination. So what we often have is a lot of families who get a death certificate that says unknown. But what we understand and what we know is some of the things that contribute to that can be removed very easily. For instance, not sleeping with your baby in an adult bed, right?
Yeah.
Having their own sleep space, not on the couch, not in a car seat, not in a walker, not in a swing. And baby needs their own space to sleep for every sleep and consistently and on their back. So we have lots of things, of course, on a podcast. I can't show you all the visuals and my hand movements and all those kind of things. But just think of it this way. This is one of the things that I think for a lot of people kind of have an aha moment. If you are sleeping in an adult bed with an infant, let's say mom is 120 pounds and she has an 8-pound baby next to her, right? So the indention that mom makes in the mattress, you know, because she weighs 120 pounds, right? And so baby can be laying next to her and it's fine. Baby can even be a little bit away from her and that's fine. We don't like that in there, but that baby only makes an indention for 8 pounds, right? So often that baby rolls into mom. Mom doesn't necessarily roll on top of baby. Baby can roll into that divot mom's making in that bed, right?
Yeah,
and it just doesn't take much for that little nose to get scrunched or to do all of those kind of things and asphyxiate. And so that's kind of that moment that we try and educate on, because a lot of people will tell us, oh, I don't move when I sleep, or oh, I would feel that. But you don't always when you're snuggling up, or, you know, a lot of times we're going to put baby on dad's chest when they're watching golf in the living room, right? That same thing can happen. They roll into things, you know, they want to snuggle. They want to, you know, scrunch up into that. So just trying to educate, baby's safest place is always in their own space, on their back, in a crib, nothing else. It's a bear crib.
Yeah.
We like to think Ruffles and all of those little things in there and the little, you know, pacifiers with a stuffed animal on it and all of those things are just unsafe for that. If those things are eliminated, you have done the best thing you can for your baby.
And not to start like a whole other topic or to share, but you would think that because, you know, with you're decorating your baby's nursery, you're doing all the shopping, you're seeing all the cute images, and it's easy to get caught up in that. And
oh, absolutely.
I like that you pointed out that you may not realize that how, you know, small their little face is and their little nose is and how little it does and how fragile they are in terms of, you know, getting into that one little wrong position.
Right.
And so I guess, and then in terms of the other reasons you said, I'm hearing, I mean, two things are coming to me, and it's basically, it comes down to equity and accessibility is how we can, as, a community, help
right.
lower some of these statistics. And what do you think this is kind of answered in what I just said, but in what you just said, what do you see as the needs that still need to be met in our community to help in terms of infant loss?
Sure. And organizations like Kids Joining Eternity, and we have other organizations out there that are really helping families to educate families, to be there and to support families. We hear that over and over and over again. I just don't know. I didn't know these things exist. It is not natural to think of an infant passing. And as a culture, we don't like talking about it. But if we don't talk about it, we can't solve some of these problems that are potentially helpful in making sure that we prevent the next one. So that's what I bring prevention in, is I understand that we're coming in after the fact, but we're trying to prevent the next one from happening. So I think as a community, continue to support, continue to talk, to continue to be there for parents that have suffered from a loss. You know, sometimes it's not what you say. Matter of fact, often it's not what you say, because people don't know what to say, so they just don't do anything. That's very isolating. You know, it's okay to say that baby's name. Most families want you to use their name and to say their name. They don't want that to be forgotten, right?
Absolutely.
You guys have suffered a loss, so I'm not telling you anything.
April and I, April and I talk about this all the time about how, you know, the importance of talking about our children that we've lost and saying their names and just making sure that people know that they're not alone. I mean, that is right. The biggest thing I feel like we say over and over and over again.
Oh, our families, and I can't tell you how much I just admire families, and this sounds odd, but that have had a loss, and they're heroes to me because they are so much more resilient and have so much more stamina than the rest of us ever do or have, because they've walked that walk. And so you all are the best ones to tell the stories and to do that. But also to help educate that next generation, that next mama, you know, to be able to kind of help her walk through that and say, it's okay to push back. Grandma doesn't need to have that baby sleeping on her bed, you know, and I'm from a generation that did it, you know, let's make the blankets and put the pillows all the way around the baby in the bed in grandma's room when it sleeps. No, it's okay to push back and say, yeah, we're not going to do that. Now, you know, when you know better, you do better. And so being able to really share that good information, you know, I cringe when I go on Facebook and you have these pictures that are so cute and lovely, but of stuffed animals or a real animal in a crib with a baby, I just cringe literally on being able to do that. And it's like, I have to give them a little space and say, okay, someone was taking this picture, so surely they know, and that animal came out immediately after. But there are some that are just really, really dangerous, you know, and being able to share that in a way that isn't, again, we're not ever wanting to shame anybody. I'm not going to point fingers. We've all done it. I've put a baby in a bed with me when I was young. Thank goodness I know better, and I've been you know, nothing happened, but it potentially could have happened. And so while I was one of the lucky ones, I want to make sure for all those other folks that they just understand it is putting a baby at risk for unsafe to pass in an unsafe sleep environment. And a really big one, and we will be really doing a lot of strategies, hopefully in the very near future, to really push what we are seeing in some of our data is the use of tobacco in the home. Oh. And as it relates to those infants that are dying in an unsafe sleep environment, we often see both of those going together. And it's not just always mom that smokes and dad may be going outside to smoke, but we have secondhand smoke. We're not understanding that. We're not understanding thirdhand smoke that maybe we only smoke when we're in the car and baby's not there. Guess what? That smoke is in that car seat when you put that baby in there. So tobacco use is massive. In the cases that we review, we see those numbers just exponentially going higher.
Wow. Yeah, you never... Go ahead, April. Sorry.
Oh, I'm just going to say, I feel like we're all three on our soapboxes here because all three of us feel so passionately about everything that we're talking about. And Kelly, I know that both Sydney and I have had conversations with other people, and we've used the exact same words that you just used. And so,
yeah,
you know, it's obvious that we're screaming loud, but people aren't hearing us yet.
Yeah. And I have a tremendous staff, and a shout out to them, that do this work all the time. The nurses that do the abstractions, they have to see so much. The social workers who hear all the stories, our community folks who are out there. And so a shout out to them for doing the great job that they do. And, you know, sometimes we're like, how many more times can we say this? How many more times can we have a class or educate on this? And so I always say, okay, let's take a deep breath. Uh-huh. And that's okay. But guess what? Today, we have a different set of women who just found out they're pregnant than we had yesterday. So as long as there's babies out there that are succumbing to some of these issues, we are going to continue to educate on this. And so the good news is that we are seeing a trend down. The bad news is it's not fast enough. It's not fair enough. It's not across all of our populations. And so we will continue to do this work as long as we're needed.
That's amazing. Sorry, a little audio problem on my end. But thank you so much for joining us, Kelly McNeil. It's been so fabulous chatting with you. So thank you.
It is. Thank you for all the good work you guys are doing.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Kelly. This is Sydney and April for the Kids Joining Eternity podcast. Thank you for helping us to break the silence surrounding miscarriage, stillbirth, and infant loss. If you or someone you know would like to share your story, please visit kidsjoiningeternity.org.
Thank you for listening to the Kids Joining Eternity podcast. For more information, please visit kidsjoiningeternity.org.